Welcome, sports fans, to the NCAA Final Four edition of the William Hill Sports Show. I'm your host, Kenny B., coming to you live just outside the William Hill Racing Sportsbook at the Club County. We're here with Josh Nagel from Sportsline. Josh, what's going on?
Ken, how you doing? We're pretty excited. As you saw, just before we came out, we all discovered the William Hill Final Four props, and pretty soon we were wondering when they were going to come out. Turns out they're just sort of hidden on the back page of the odds for the game, so now we're all just stoked jumping in on these bets.
Absolutely. You know, they have the two games tomorrow, then the championship game coming back on Monday. You know, and they do have a bunch of props here, which I've actually overlooked right now, but we'll get into those a little bit later. Mark the Kid Vespi, what's going on, Mark?
Ken, what's up?
Welcome back.
A new definition of a back page, huh?
Yeah.
Josh, get it?
Exactly.
Get that joke? Never mind. You're supporting your Red Sox attire, Mark. What's up with the Red Sox? Absolute dumpster fire right now.
Well, I mean, 11-game road trip to start the year on the West Coast.
Well,
I mean, make it tough.
And
they'll be better for it, believe me.
What's your Aces record, out of curiosity?
Which one?
Chris Sale.
All of them are winless.
Yeah, that's my point.
So, all my Aces.
But with that being said, you know, just a rough start. Our buddy Kyle Backlund actually left. He's leaving tomorrow to go back and see the Red Sox, you know. Hopefully his presence can get him off the schneid. What is the Red Sox record right now?
2-6.
I actually have it right here. 2-6 right now. Look at this. 2-6, 3-5. Even the Yankees, 3-4. How about Baltimore, 4-3?
You think that's going to continue? And you think,
I don't know. Let's figure out a little bit later.
Think the Rays are going to continue?
I don't know.
The Rays are pretty good.
A little bit later, let's figure out what some prices are on some of these teams and see if there's any value in some future bets, Josh.
The Rays, there's value in the Rays, 10-1 to win the division.
10-1?
It's probably more like 8 now.
Yeah, I don't know about 10-1. I don't know if 10-1 is enough.
I think it was 12 last week now.
Obviously, we're down to four teams in the NCAA tournament. Nevada exits the first round. You know, a couple of weeks ago, you know, tough first round loss to Florida. You know, with the offseason comes all the speculation and rumors and the Twitter and all that stuff of, you know what's going to happen with Coach Musselman. You know, I know earlier in the week it was all over Twitter that he was in Arkansas and that, you know, he's talking to Arkansas. And then there was the rumor that he was offered some, you know, like, what was it, Josh, $18 million over 5 years, somewhere in that area, with a lot of guaranteed money and incentive money. And then later in the day, you know, they showed him and Caleb at Reno High here, you know, Caleb going through some drills and Musk coaching, or defending Caleb.
Or
yeah, exactly. Right. And then later on in the day, you know, after it got out of hand, Daniel Musselman came out on Twitter and she says, no, we're here in Reno and we're not going anywhere. So, but then, you know, so we kind of put it, but now, you know, you kind of think the rumors are kind of resurfaced again, Josh.
Yeah, Ken, it's sort of an interesting sequence of events. One thing, you know, since the NCAA tournament run, as you mentioned, ended early for Nevada, a couple of things caught me, you know, a little bit off guard. One, that I was surprised that most of them didn't pop up as a serious candidate for more jobs than just Arkansas, of all places. I realize he has some, you know, SEC ties for sure. He was an assistant right at LSU before coming back to Nevada. But, you know, some of the openings that happened, like, for instance, Cal, as we saw, filled by Mark Fox, which, I mean, there was, I say rumors, he was, Musselman's name was mentioned there, and let's face it, he was flat out, he was going to go there 2 seasons ago. There was some holdup with the contract negotiations, which we'll never know, but that was the whole reason why he just sort of backed out of that. And you figure, if he was dealing with the same people, and they were on good terms, it was just some kind of snag, whatever. I mean, they gave the other assistant, Wyking Jones, a couple of years. Cal was awful, they got rid of him. And it seems like a thing where maybe they could mend that bridge. So he was in the running, but then Mark Fox gets that job. Hey, UCLA, you know, his name was mentioned, but now that looks like, who's it? Has it, they named Jamie Dixon yet, or has that one become official?
Not that I know.
There's such a big carousel. I figured his name would pop up in more ways than one, but I just thought it was funny the other day when you saw, in fact, because I saw it on our show's Twitter and Facebook feeds and some other places. I think more than anything, maybe it was some local media in Arkansas that got a little out of hand, because at first some of the headlines made it as if it was a done deal. It's like, oh yeah, Arkansas to announce him as coach immediately. There's also pictures of like a huge conference room they had set up for a press conference, or actually at the court or whatever. It's like, yeah, any minute now, like, people are going to come out and it's going to be just formal announcement. And it seemed odd, but of course a lot of these backdoor deals are done. It's secret all the time. You know, they call them the airport meetings and stuff, where you know, they meet with the candidates and suddenly there's an announcement. So I saw this, I figure, okay, well, probably going to happen sooner or later. Then, as you alluded to, I thought it was funny when suddenly there was the disputed sentiments about whether he was in Arkansas at all. Like, again, many of the local media there still said, oh, yes, he's here. Guarantee he's in Fayetteville today. Suddenly, you mentioned Musselman's wife says, no, he's not. He's here. And he hasn't left Reno. And then they showed proof, which is funny. I mean, photo proof. And then so it went from this close to basically just someone get him a pen and let him sign the thing and the ink dries and he's gone to a question mark as to whether he'll be offered the job. By and large, whether it's Arkansas or anywhere else, we're all prepared for it. If that money idea was true, I mean, and blame him. He's basically maxing out in Nevada. Everything they could do to find a way to pay the guy $1 million, and he's instantly going to go to sort of a middling SEC program and make two more times that, maybe two extra million. Couldn't blame him for taking the job if it presents itself.
Well, I mean, that's the whole thing is just what can we do in our area to, kind of sway him. How much could we pay him to keep him? You know what I mean? That's the only thing. Like
$2 million a year. Almost. I think we almost have to double his salary, Mark.
Yeah, and if we could do that, I think he would stay for sure. Because at some point, $3 or $4 mil over time is just way too much to turn down. You know what I mean? At least you got to give yourself a 3 or 4 year opportunity to make that kind of money. And then you're really set up for life. I don't know Musselman's situation. He's made plenty of money, I'm sure. But, at some point when you're talking 3 and 4 times the money, it's just – it'd be hard for, even though we're a fan of Mus and we want him to stay, if he were to take one of those jobs, who could blame him, really?
Yeah, exactly. As you mentioned, it's real money, and it's a layman's terms to anything else. Like, if you had a job you really liked, making 50 grand somewhere, someone else offered you 150, but you had to move, out of state or a little bit of ways. Most of us, that's a huge quality of life difference, right? I mean, to triple your income. So, like you said, you can't blame him. At the end of the day, I do think, it's not necessarily all – just coach speak or whatever for him to talk about how much he loves the community and everything here. I believe that it's genuine when he says it, but I also believe if you look at the track record and everything else, he's an ambitious guy that I think he wants to test his skills on the biggest stage at the power conferences. And by and large, if he were to leave tomorrow, I think it's borderline stealing to have him here as long as we did.
You can't get mad at him.
Exactly.
Basically, where you're
I agree, and we've got a year or two out of him more than we thought maybe possible
exactly.
Anyway. And but, it's tough to uproot your kids, uproot your whole, change. If you're very comfortable in your situation, it's tough to kind of uproot all that and start over and do that again. That's where that so much money kind of, negates some of that, because otherwise, if you're happy, you're happy, and you don't want to change.
Too much money is too much money. You kind of heard the stuff too that he apparently lost his first marriage because of all the travel and not being, and from what I hear, Miss Mus, Danielle, she kind of likes Reno. She actually came, if you remember the tweet, she came through. She was the one that came out and put her foot down and said, "We're in Reno and we're not looking to leave."
You know what? And that's the key part of that tweet you mentioned, Ken, that's worth paying attention to, where it's like, hey, not just disputing whether he's in Arkansas or not, but that was the key part that caught my attention was at the end where she goes, and no plans to go anywhere, which is like, wait a second, what is that? I mean, that's a pretty strong statement to come directly from the spouse. Mark, you talk about future income considerations, because I don't know what they could do. Let's face it, after that first year when it looked like he was going to leave, they scrapped and passed the collection plate around and got him up to $1 million. I don't know if it's possible to get him more, but you talk about the happiness versus money factor. I'll give one example that I think is sort of relevant to this discussion. But remember many years ago, the guy who was at Wichita State, Greg Marshall, he was the hot coaching candidate. Remember at the time he was at Winthrop, and I think they made a Sweet 16. He was the hot coaching candidate. And in that offseason, a lot of jobs were open, big ones, and they wanted them. I mean, not huge programs, but power programs. I want to say along the lines of like Illinois type of NC State. Those type of programs all had openings, and he was the hot guy. They all came after him. And he went. People were borderline surprised when he went to Wichita State. Like, wait a second, that seems like, on paper, it seemed like almost a lateral move. He had power conferences coming after him. Like, why did you take this job? I remember what he said in his press conference. He goes, "Let me tell you why." He gave a few basic reasons. Like, first of all, so if you want to talk about the money and everything else, he said he was making $150 at Winthrop, and Marshall Wichita State offered him $450. He's like, so immediately they're tripling my salary. He goes, to me, that's a big deal. He's like, that's not like a tiny money jump from $150 to $450. So it is financially a bigger thing. He said, after every program that I interviewed with and I saw the facilities and everything else, he goes, I just realized, we can do it here. We can really, the facilities are here, the resources, and more than any other place, I felt like we could succeed on a national level. This is why I took the job. Well, long story short, he's still there. Not only is he still there, and he has had a great team every year, he's somehow he's making $6 million a year. So he went from that $450 he was initially offered. How does Wichita State afford to pay a guy $6 million? I don't know, but that's also a big reason why he hasn't jumped to, like, Indiana last year. He still wanted when the openings happened, but now people can't even compete with his money. So can I ask you, or if you guys have the idea, if a place like Wichita State can do that, what can Nevada, you know, do for Musselman? And I still answer not sure, because, you know, the people, budgets are limited and whatnot. There's still non, you know, sports people are rankled by the idea that he's the highest paid, you know, state employee, whatever, in the university system. I mean, how many bake sales and T-shirt, you know, things can you have to get him up? I don't know what to do.
Boosters.
Yeah. Do we have enough? I mean, seriously, do we have the – you know what I'm saying?
It's going to take a group effort, I can tell you that. You know, he's got the bonuses, the attendance bonuses, and the, you know, winning the league bonuses, and all those bonuses coming, you know, Josh. So, obviously, that's what it is. But you kind of wonder, you know, what the end game is for Mus. I mean, you know, how much longer does he want to coach? I mean, he's not an old guy by any means, you know. But, you know, what's he got? What do you think he has in him? You know, maybe 10 more years, 15 more years? I mean, I don't know.
That's a good one. Calipari's 60, and he just signed that lifetime deal with Kentucky.
Sure.
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know.
He can stay in Nevada, and he can.
And he's a young 50, you know, Musselman, right?
Yeah.
He's a great
shape. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. He can stay in Nevada, and he can run roughshod over the Mountain West, go to the NCAA tournament probably every year. He can do that. Or he can go to the Southeast Conference and compete every year with LSU and Tennessee and Kentucky and Auburn, you know, and all these other teams in Florida. You know, Alabama this year, they're 8-10 in conference. I mean, they're 18-16 overall. You know, so I just don't, and even Texas A&M, who do they just go out and get? They just signed
Buzz Williams.
Buzz Williams.
Got rid of Billy Kennedy, yeah.
Yeah, but my point is you know, there's a little bit of comfort by saying that, you know, what is if he goes to Arkansas, what is going to be success? What are you going to define success at Arkansas? What is it, Josh?
Well, you're right. The same thing. Well, for everything I've heard, you know, they had Mike Anderson was there a really long time. I think I said 8 years. He made 2 NCAA tournaments. So they want to go to the Big Dance more often, and they want to have a bit of a consistent winner more often. They were just that, just sort of a mid-leading team. I mean, they weren't awful, but they never really also got over the top and did anything. And the times they did make the NCAA tournament, they didn't, you know, go anywhere. So they kind of, of course, they're longing for the old glory days of the Nolan Richardson. I mean, that's probably never going to, you know, happen again. But they want to be relevant again, for sure. They just don't want to be this middle-of-the-road SEC team. They want to be able to compete possibly for a conference title and be a regular fixture in the NCAA tournament.
I understand all that, and I agree with all that, you know, and that's what they want, but can they achieve it? I mean, look at what they're going up against. I mean, they're going up against some beasts. I mean, LSU loses their, you know, LSU might be looking at some, I know that I was reading today the FBI's got, they're going to launch this huge investigation into recruiting violations at LSU, so there's going to be some, you know, implication or some sanctions dropped down on LSU coming forward, but, you know, he can stay here, he can win. And the other thing, too, Mark, let's talk about this real quick. You know, Trent Johnson left Nevada, went to Stanford, went to LSU. Then he was out of coaching for a while. Mark Fox went to Georgia. Had a good little stint over there. Never really succeeded out there. And he was out of coaching for a long time. You know, and now you had David Carter, who's an assistant right now. He's never got back into the head coaching ranks. Basically, it's if he goes to Arkansas and doesn't win, it could be the end of his career.
Yeah, theoretically.
Mark, it definitely could. I mean, it's just the Pac coaches, they've been doing this little carousel since they left here, you know. They think they're going to bigger and better things, but that hasn't really worked out for any of them, really. So maybe he takes that into consideration. I mean, the SEC this year was a fantastic league. You know, I mean,
yeah,
you
really
got teams
really
like
up.
Ole Miss is on the come. You got Florida's, you know, getting back to where they were a few years ago, and so
and Vanderbilt today just signing Stackhouse.
Yes, I'm not sure how that
they were 0-18.
How that's going to work out, but.
Yeah, and they were thrilled when they got Bryce Drew a couple years ago, and he didn't work out, apparently. Yeah.
But night in, night out, you have a tough game. I mean, the SEC schedule's a gauntlet, especially like this year, it really was.
But Mark, what do you think another parallel example, and that's, like you said, the, you know, sort of mid-major as kind of a, you know, recruiting ground for greater things or whatever. Look at the Mark Few example of Gonzaga is what I'm getting at. Remember, for a few years, they had a few coaches that thought, oh, okay, we'll just use this as a stepping stone. But remember, Dan Monson was the last guy before. Mark Few apparently has the right idea because Monson said, oh, I'll go. And last I heard, remember, he went to Minnesota from Gonzaga, did nothing there. Last a few years, got fired. It was just, you know, basically in in between mode for a long time. Last I heard, he was at Long Beach State a couple years ago when they made the NCAA tournament. Is he still there, Dan Monson? I don't know. But nonetheless, he went from one of the hottest coaching prospects to relative obscurity after the power conference thing didn't work out, and then he just kind of lost his reputation that was being built and just ended up taking whatever job he could get.
What does Gonzaga pay Few?
Yeah, I don't know, but it's got to be a lot because you're right. So Mark Few takes over for him and says, you know what, despite all the offers when he took him to the next level also – to greater heights than it had been. And after a while, he was the hot guy. They just stopped asking because after a while, he'd get told no so much. He's like, no, he's staying here. But to your question, I mean, that's a good one too. But Gonzaga's private. I don't know. Can they raise money?
Yeah, I mean, they're a private school, right? So they probably can generate funds a little easier than we can here.
You know, one thing that's a little concerning to me, and maybe I'm reading too far into it, is that we have scholarships available right now. We haven't signed any of these senior graduates, you know. And I know that, you know, there's still a lot of them sitting out there, but you see a lot of them are starting to trickle into some of these programs, you know. And we've really gotten zero buzz about anybody, you know, like, you know, showing interest or coming, you know, coming here for official visits. So I think there was the one kid that did come, but, you know, it's just kind of interesting. And then we had a couple of kids already transfer out, Townsell and the other guy, Zuzwal. I think they both transferred out. And, you know, so here we are, you know, with scholarships to offer. But, you know, is that because he can't give the senior graduate the honest, are you going to be here? Yes, I guarantee I'm going to be here. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm speculating here, guys. I'm 100% speculating. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be, Ken. But like you said, I don't know whether you can make that statement honestly or not has ever stopped anyone from saying it and then, you know, changing later. But another thing I didn't realize you mentioned, speaking of, you know, players who've come and gone through the program, remember, you know, we had so many in this past off season that were coming to graduate transfers and others, how people kind of fall off. And what I'm getting at is I didn't realize at the Pac-12 tournament that the one kid ended up at Oregon, and he had a great year.
He had a great year late.
Yes. But they had nobody. I just mean it was the perfect fit. It's like, I wondered what happened to that kid because on paper he sounded good. I remember when it said we signed him and I looked him up. I'm like, man, this guy's pretty good. Well, he's the one who fell off the truck because there's just no more room. I didn't know where he went. But then when, you watch the Oregon games and they talked about him, like, it was a good fit because they needed players and he needed a home.
I actually did some research on him halfway through the year because I wanted to see how he was doing up there. And I talked to my buddies up there. I have buddies up there that follow the Oregon program, and they said that he's only getting a few minutes, not really fitting in. But late in the year, he was
even the coach came out and did a lot, and
he came out and he was the intensity, the juice off the bench that they needed. But the one Oregon kid that got away from us was Wooten. That kid, oh my goodness! If we'd had Wooten in the middle this year, boy, did he come on late, you know. But with that being said, you know, the covers aren't dry for Nevada. We just got to make sure that, you know, Musk gets back. Do you think he's here next year, Mark? This is kind of. Is Chris Beard going to leave Texas Tech to go to Arkansas?
No.
I'm with you. Why?
Why would he go? Why would he do that?
Why are there hope?
Again, unless just bigger paycheck.
I mean, it would have. Yeah, it would just have to be a.
But I doubt it.
A sickening difference between
exactly.
The money.
Look at what he's built already there. And by the way, who was it? I'm embarrassed. I don't even know how to pronounce his name. But the guy UNLV hired from like South Dakota State. What's his name?
Yeah, yeah. Olin's whatever. They don't even have. He's already saying that they're the flagship program of the Mountain West, making all these claims. He doesn't even have a team that he can put on. He doesn't even have a starting five yet. Everybody transferred out.
You know, they had him pinpointed to be the guy to bring in. They got rid of Menzies. Apparently, this was a hand-picked guy to come in and be the savior. And honestly, I've never heard of him, except I know South Dakota State's got a good program.
Yeah. So let's head off to our first commercial break. When we come back, we'll continue talking sports. This is the Windmill Sports Show on ESPN 94.5
Sports.
FM. Welcome back to the Windmill Sports Show. Coming to you live from the Club County on ESPN 94.5 FM. It's the County of his birthday, guys. Did you guys know that? 99-cent ham and eggs, 99-cent pancakes, $1.99 burgers and fries. Look at our board guy.
How old is the County?
It's like 50-something, 56, 57. Actually, 57. I do know this. 57. 57 years old. Isn't
you were here since day one almost.
I've been here since 1988, Mark.
It's the year I graduated.
Yeah. So, like,
that's back when those prices were legit on the menu. Then 99-cent ham and eggs was the thing.
Yeah, exactly. 99-cent ham and eggs. Prime rib and fries, $3.99. You can't beat that.
Yeah, it's worth the wait. Go get in line at the top deck down there.
Yeah. With that being said, you know, 99-cent shrimp cocktail. So goes. These prices go on 24/7 until Thursday.
What about the club sandwich? Any deals on the club?
No. But you like the County of the Club.
Best club sandwich in town.
It is, isn't it? No doubt about it.
No
doubt about it. So Club County, come down here, celebrate the 57th birthday of the Club County. But rollback prices, giving away $15,000. Lots of stuff going on here at the Club County.
Good thing I know one of the owners.
Yeah, here we go. Michigan State, Texas Tech. Michigan State -2.5, totals 132.5. You know, I look at these last two games, and I would not be surprised of any outcome, side or total. I really wouldn't. And, you know, let's not start with the Michigan State. Let's start with the Auburn-Virginia game. They got the games are a little bit reversed on the board. The first game tomorrow is Virginia-Auburn. Virginia's -5.5 with a total of 131. You know, you look at Auburn and look at the gauntlet, you know, that Auburn's survived in this tournament. You know, they had the game one.
All blue bloods, except for the survival.
The blue blood executioner, totally.
Yeah, but if you look at what happened, you know, in that game one, let me get it right here. It's the
New Mexico State.
Here it is, New Mexico State. The guy lines up for a wide open three, clinks it. Misses,
they were that close to
misses,
being out.
misses free. They missed some free throws. Yeah. New Mexico State misses free throws.
He's got three and he makes one.
Yeah, makes one. Exactly. I mean, it's just crazy what happened, you know, for Auburn to advance. But since then, they beat Kansas, North Carolina, and Kentucky.
Who are those teams?
12 straight games, and they're averaging 87.7 points a game.
Yeah, they're that team, Ken. There's always, you know, a mixture when it gets to the Final Four, and they're sort of the one that caught fire at the right time. You know, they're kind of decent all year, up and down a little bit. Of course, they really live on the perimeter. Auburn makes
they live on the perimeter.
Third most, you know,
how many open layups can you pass up to pass out?
I mean, wide open layups.
Ken,
they'll go 3-on-1 and dish it to a guy for a three, and the other guys run to the hoop in case they get the rebound.
Yeah.
I mean, they're happy with it. Bruce Pearl doesn't mind. It's pretty nutso. But, yeah, but they're that team, kind of middling. They were okay. They had a couple bad losses. But you watch them, and Auburn at its best, you're like, yeah, this team's pretty decent. I'll admit, I didn't see this, you know, coming from them, except I'll tell you this. They beat Kansas, and it's like, all right, Kansas is in the middle of a down year, and you're not going to read too much into that, although the offensive display was impressive. To me, though, what they did to North Carolina just couldn't be ignored. I mean, just obliterated them wire to wire. Of course, that was the game, though, when their forward Akiki got hurt, and that's a big deal going forward, the injury. But I'll say the Kentucky game, to me, it was almost the most impressive because even without quite the firepower, that was one where they just grinded it out. It was bizarre because I remember watching that game thinking, you know, Kentucky kind of took control in the first half. They're up 5 at halftime. It was weird. The whole second half, I didn't really feel like Kentucky was really in danger. I feel kind of like the Houston game. I thought, all right, Kentucky, you just hang around here. They'll find ways to get a couple buckets and end up, you know, winning this close game. I was surprised Auburn found a way to – you know, send it to overtime.
You know what they did?
And
was
then they did it. And I was just, to me, that just shocked. I didn't
Harper
I didn't
would
think
dribble up
the
top because the threes weren't falling, and then he would drive the lane and get layups. How many layups did they get in the second half?
He also made some spectacular finishes, too, though. Some contested.
No doubt. But he's a senior guard. I mean, he's a great player.
Right.
And Kentucky made no adjustment to. Like, those aren't going to be available against Virginia.
No, you're right. And they D'd him up. Like, unlike Houston, who seemed to. They couldn't get a stop at all against Reed Travis or PJ Washington. They got eaten up. Auburn found a way. They just bodied him up again. Some of the shots were missed, but they had the same size disadvantage, but they just did everything they could. You know, contested him, and the good thing, unlike Houston, when they got those post guys to miss, they cleared the board. That's the other thing Houston didn't do, right? They allowed the offensive glass.
It's tough to discredit Auburn at this point because they've won it different ways, and they seem to be able to play, you know, the slow game or the up-tempo game. They're awesome at that part of it, you know. Against Carolina and Kansas, I mean – they outdid Kansas and Carolina doing what they do, you know. So, and then the Kentucky game, you know, they were forced to slow it down. And even Auburn themselves were walking the ball up and down the court, which they tend to do sometimes. That's why it's tough to – you don't want to pigeonhole them as this up-tempo team because they will slow it down sometimes depending on the personnel and the teams they are playing. Bruce Pearl's an excellent coach, I think. He can adjust and adopt, and he has the players to do it. And
although it's tempo flexible, wouldn't you think against Virginia they would be well served by trying to impose their will in terms of at least going fast is the only chance you have.
But you know,
Virginia sets that defense.
You know, the slower tempo teams usually, you know,
they
override
dictate
the
more.
They usually dictate
no, you're
more
right.
Because there's
you're
more
right.
There's more things they can do to create that tempo. That's why to me, I mean, we haven't really talked about our picks yet or anything, but the 131 seems like a lot of points to me. It seems like an under game to me because. You know, I'm thinking, you know, 64-57 type of game, but, you know, I just don't really know because both teams shoot a lot of threes per game. If the threes are falling, if they're shooting an efficient range from threes, then that could go over no problem. So it's one of those things you got to just kind of where do you think they're – and then you maybe the big stadium, you know, a lot of times the shooting is poorer in those situations. But I've also heard that in the shoot-arounds, all the teams are happy with the – with their perception,
shooter's
their depth
eye.
Perception.
Cool. Shooter's eye.
They think the stadium is gettable.
Then you have to also,
that makes
of
sense.
Course, there's the end game situation, too, with how, you know, what's the gap with the team. You know, it was a team trailing by five or six to the point where, you know, they're going to extend it with free throws, and you get a cluster of scoring right at the end there. But other thing people don't seem to realize, too, I've had a couple, I say, arguments, but you know, a couple of guys I work with where it's crazy, where it's pretty clear the only Virginia games they've seen are maybe like the past couple. They're like, oh, yeah, they sort of got lucky and they don't have much offense. This is the best offensive team Virginia's had in Tony Bennett's tenure, right? They're scoring 72 a game, which is the highest they've ever had. And in years past, like, for instance, a couple years ago, the Malcolm Brogdon team, they had some pretty good athletes, too. But people just don't realize that, the perception has changed to where, yeah, Virginia was just this kind of rugby team on defense and occasionally would catch up to them with the lack of offense. They've got real players. And one guy I worked with didn't want to believe me. I said they possibly have three future pros on their team, one being DeAndre Hunter, like a consensus lottery pick, right? A guy I worked with was like, yeah, I heard him talking about Hunter being a draft pick. He goes, I think that's a joke. The guy's not even that good. I had to show him, like, all the mock drafts were pretty much Hunter is no worse than eight in any mock draft you'll find. Some four, right behind the Duke guys and the Murray State kid, Morant. So he's good. He's an NBA lottery talent. Believe it or not, the point guard, Ty Jerome, a junior, he's in the mid to late first round in every mock draft out there. And Kyle Guy, the best shooter, is considered a second. So three potential pros, and it's not unheard of. Like we just talked about, Brogdon's doing great things in the league. Joe Harris is a Virginia guy. I mean, these guys, it's one of those things. That's what, to me, what makes them lethal this year. Is the defense is the same, best in the country, but they've got some offensive options.
They're averaging, they're giving up 55.4 points a game during the tournament, you know, and that's, they're playing great defense. You know, go back to Auburn real quick. You know, they beat New Mexico State 78-77, and we all know that, you know, they kind of got lucky to win that game, even though, you know, it kind of was a late burst by New Mexico State, but, you know, they still get the victory. Then they beat Kansas 89-75. North Carolina, like you said, Josh and Kid, 97-80, and then in the Kentucky game, overtime, 77-71. So they are pace. They can control the pace, Mark. They kind of showed that in the Kentucky game. Back to what you were saying.
How many points did you get in overtime in the Kentucky game, Ken?
I'd have to
ask. I mean, the overtime was like, I don't know, 60-60.
It was really high.
I know
score.
It was 60-60 because you asked for it.
Regulation.
You asked for it to be 60-60.
Yes.
So, you know, that game really was the slower paced game. 60-60 at the end of regulation. I mean, that's what the Virginia games would be more like, the Kentucky game versus these Carolina and Kansas games. I'll guarantee it.
Auburn or Virginia on the other side, you know, they open up round one versus Gardner-Webb. They 71-56 after actually trailing at halftime. Then they almost came back and covered the 22, if you guys remember that, Josh.
Yeah.
How much pressure had to be on these kids after exiting last year in the first round, first time ever, 16 beats a one, then being down as a 16-1
yeah,
this year.
I was watching that game. At first, I thought it was sort of comical that they were down again. But it got scary. They were down, like I said, they were down 14 at one point to Gardner-Webb. Like, they were already in serious territory, 14 late in the first half. They went into the halftime break trailing. At first, I thought it was sort of comical that they were the team that got upset last year and now they're down again. But then I had to reverse course just in that. I put it this way. They took so much heat for that. Of course, they're always going to live in infamy for the first one to lose to 16. But I can't help but I've always liked Tony Bennett. I almost feel bad that it had to happen to him, of all people, because he's a great coach. And Virginia's taken a lot of grief for lack of success in the postseason. Of course, that's the ultimate low you could have. And then, yeah, they get kind of a scare again. Thankfully, they went on a good run, put that game away. And you know what reminds me of a little bit, Mark? Remember a couple years ago, sometimes there's a dominant team, right? Like last year, Villanova, wire to wire. They're just dominant. They covered every game, won them all by double figures, smashed Michigan in the final, wasn't even close. And it was just clear who the top team was, top to bottom. A couple years back, I remember North Carolina won it, and it just seemed like they were just getting by. Every game they won was like 1 point. They beat Oregon by a point in the Final Four. Sweet 16 game, it was like 1 point. And it seems like they were just kind of left standing. That's how I feel about Virginia this year. Like, I don't think the dominant destiny team has announced themselves, but I feel like Virginia could be left standing. I want to say that the other night what they did against Purdue, that crazy ending, when that guy Diakite, when he hits that shot to send him to overtime, that sort of feels like – the tide's changed in your favor a little bit. Yep.
And they had to fade the guard from Purdue just having
Carson Edwards, 42.
Oh, my goodness.
And everyone says, how could this great defensive team let that happen to them? Well, you know what? They're not used to guys shooting NBA threes over them. They'll give you that. Yeah. Virginia's the pack line. They don't want to give up easy shots. So when you pull up from 25, they're going to let you have it all day. If you can make it, so be it. Carson Edwards was the only guy that could beat him doing that.
Yeah, and he was
screens running, like, off balance. Like, he was just heat check, serious. And, like, he's just –
No one else had more than seven. Games. So what
Auburn doesn't shoot those threes like that. They're more Harper and them. They can, though. I'm not saying that they can't do it, but they're a different type of shooting than that. I mean, that was just a playmaker being a playmaker. Carson Edwards was just making it happen. had nothing to do with Virginia's defense.
Exactly. They were contested, too. It was same thing the way he looked against Tennessee, just ripping the nets with everything. The kid was just on fire.
Except for I was screaming at Virginia to do a box one or something.
Eventually they did. Eventually they flew out at it late in
about
the game. But
10 minutes too late.
But still, Mark, at the right time, because at the end of the game, when forced him into a miss with the game on the line.
For sure.
Yeah. But, so again, Virginia hasn't been spectacular, but I'm rooting for him to get back there and do it just to, for the redemption story.
I hope they win myself.
Look at this. Yep, Virginia -3 in the first half with a total of 16.5. For the game, Virginia -5.5, total 131. A couple of the props Nick has here at the William Hill Racing Sportsbook. The largest lead of the game, 15.5. What do you guys think about that? 15.5?
Yeah, I think that one's an under just because –
of the low-scoring game.
Right,
the
what
total.
We're talking about, the projected tempo, right? I think I think the only way that gets over is Virginia just smashes them. I don't think Auburn stands a chance. So to me, there's only one side with a chance to hit it over, that being Virginia. But still, I just think that's one where, even if they take a double-figure lead, it might be by like 10, but I just feel like that's one where the margin's going to fluctuate at a real low to medium level.
Mark, any thoughts on the
total? Well, I just think that's a tough number to get to. I'm not interested in betting that prop. I would bet it, under, because I just don't see 15.5. I mean, maybe late in the game if the game just gets away. That's the only way I see it happening.
Total 3 points made the game by both teams, 17.5. That's one of those games. You look at this, and that's what Auburn wants to do. And if Auburn is hot, this 17.5 is going to get there if Auburn makes their shots.
They've made that by themselves.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree. I think the over on threes is one of my favorites on this because, like you mentioned, one thing, both teams, like I said, Auburn makes 11.5 threes a game. I looked this up for Sports Line, but Virginia also makes about 9, which isn't exactly low. They're above average, too. And you look at, Kyle Guy, their most, as they say, their leading scorer, I'll say most explosive is DeAndre Hunter, but their highest producing scorer is Kyle Guy. If he's on, that'll lift him up, but Jerome can shoot the three also. So basically, put it this way, Virginia hits their average, it probably goes over because Auburn's living and dying by it no matter what happens.
Absolutely. So I would like the threes over. I would like the largest lead under. Total points by Auburn, 63.
Again, it just kind of depends on the manner in which you think the game will go because, if you think Auburn gets their preferred tempo, then it would go over. But I'm not real big on team totals to begin with.
Plus, you'd kind of want to correlate that maybe because if you think they're going to make a lot of these threes, it's hard to bet the under, If you think they are going to make them, then 63 seems like a lower number.
Guy, Hunter, and Jerome, Josh, you were talking about them, the three games that are in the NBA lottery. Their total points for the game are 14, 15, and 16.5. So one of them's going to have a good game. Two of them are going over. One of them's going under. I think if you bet all three of those guys over, you're probably going to win two out of three.
I agree. I would put it this way. I think the one I like over the most of the three is Ty Jerome just because against Purdue, he's the guy with the ball in his hands at all times. He was making stuff happen with the shot clock winding down. He can create inside it out. He can shoot free throws well. I just think just based on that late shot clock creation factor, though, he'll get more shots. I think he goes over. Hunter is sort of the wild card, and Jerome, he was really slumping up until the Purdue game. So it's like it's hard to call on those guys, but I like Jerome over for sure.
Jerome's the one I like of the three reasons that you talked about. I mean, those are good points, and those are the exact same reasons that I like him.
Right. He's got the lowest number.
He's the shortest line, too, at 14, Mark.
Yep.
I mean, he just what they do now with the other point guard,
Jerome,
the little guy, excuse my name. He brings the ball up a lot more, so he allows Jerome and Guy to come off the ball screens and stuff like that and create their own opportunities for shots, which they didn't used to do earlier in the year until the other point guard
started coming along.
Huge part of their
– Right, with that Purdue game, I don't think people gave enough credit to. How about that pass? 50 feet on a rope with the shot clock winding down. Like, there's 2 seconds. You think most people would just grab it and, wing it at the backboard, see what happens. He's keeping his poise. Not only that, but one-handed pass on a rope to the guy who just grabs it and puts it in.
It was crazy. That was the only way it was going
to
happen.
And how many times do we have to see the team up three fouling, have it backfire to decide it's not the best strategy? It never works.
All right. Let's head off to our next commercial break. This is William Hill Sports Show on ESPN 94.5 FM. Welcome back to the Club County Eva William Hill Sports Show. Coming to you live just outside the Racing Sports Book at the Club County Eva in William Hill. County Eva birthday celebration this weekend, turning back the prices on all their old menu items. They brought back the 99-cent ham and eggs, 99-cent pancakes, and $1.99 burgers and fries, $3.99 prime rib, and 99-cent shrimp cocktail through Sunday. So come down and And you get birthday cake, Josh. I like cake.
Yeah, pretty sweet, Ken. And remember, I think you guys have had the celebration just about every year now for a while, right?
Yeah.
But what's funny is I remember I came here last year at this time. I just happened to get lucky because occasionally I'm running errands. I'm going to work, whatever. Once in a while, I'll stop by and try to get a bite before the show because, whatever, didn't get lunch during the day. I remember I did that, you know, about a year ago, but I forgot about the celebration. I didn't know what was going on, but I came here and like, geez, it seems pretty early for there to be a line. What's going on? Like 3 o'clock? Why is there a line? But I didn't have to wait long. Then I got in and saw the menu. I'm like, oh, awesome.
Yeah.
It's pretty sweet to get that lunch for a dollar.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. 99-cent ham and eggs, Mark. You like that, don't you?
I don't pay for meals here. but I mean, I would like it, yes.
Wow. Wow. That's zinger.
Zinger.
Auburn 6-1 to advance to win the NCAA tournament. Virginia 3-2. So those Virginia's actually the odds on favorite. You know, kind of a you know moving forward. We'll let you see 3-6. Same as Michigan 3. What is that? Six,
yeah, plus 150 and plus 160.
Six, 7.5 and 8. So it's right there. Virginia just a slight favorite over Michigan State, which we'll get to that a little bit later. What'd you say, Josh?
Oh, I said it's plus 150 versus plus 160 for translation of the odds.
Yeah, you gotcha. With Virginia being the favorite.
Correct.
Yeah, with that being said.
Dime on the dollar per more.
Second game tomorrow tips off at approximately 5:49. Michigan State versus Texas Tech. Michigan State laying 2.5 in this game, 132.5. You know, all eyes are on Texas Tech. You know, they're saying that the head coach. Where's my notes? The head coach at Texas Tech is the leading candidate to get the Arkansas job. Chris Beard. You know, we kind of talked about that a little bit earlier. You know, I just don't. Can Arkansas pull Beard away from Texas Tech? You know, this Texas Tech team, they're doing great things right now. I mean, you know, I wish I would have had a future. I don't know how I let it slip that I don't have a future on Texas Tech. I really don't, because in all my brackets, I have Texas Tech advancing to the Final Four. I love their defense. They have great guard play. They had the player of the year in the Big 12, the guard, Mark
Jared Culver.
Culver, yeah. I mean, and that's what it takes. Good defense, good guard. Why not? You know, and all of a sudden I slip on Texas Tech.
I slipped on them as well. It was just one of those things. It's hard to have faith since they don't have the history there. But you're right. I mean, not to mention they're incredibly efficient on defense, kind of like basically just second in the country to Virginia. They're effective, but also it's kind of easy to run them off. They lost to West Virginia in the Big 12 tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're up and down, and that sort of gives you a sour taste about them. But, yeah, obviously at their best, they have a style that plays and travels well. I was looking some stuff up during our first break as we talked about salaries and whatnot. It's curious if he were to go to Arkansas. Right now Beard makes about $3 million a year, right, which is allegedly the offer that Arkansas would make Musselman and maybe whoever else. So they, of course, would have to pull out the pocketbooks to bump him up higher. But just to throw it out there, I saw a stat. You know, they ran a chart a few years ago when they said Mark Few was like the second lowest paid player of the coaches left in the Sweet 16. So just 2 years ago, he was making $1.37 million. So you want the comparison. So if Musselman's at $1 million and sort of his closest counterpart in terms of a real high-profile but mid-major coach in a middling conference – so there it is. So, you know, the guy next door is making a little bit, but not, you know, world-shattering amounts more. But anyhow, but back to that point. But, yeah, Texas Tech, talk about resumes too. Just dismantled a really good Michigan team, turned around and did Gonzaga a couple days later. It's a pretty impressive feat for sure.
13-1 their last 14, the conference loss. Am I looking at the right? Yeah, Texas Tech. They lost to West Virginia in the Big 12 conference tournament. You know, and like you said, you know, they opened up with Northern Kentucky and they dismantled 72-57. Then they rolled that up with Buffalo, and I know the entire world was on Buffalo. They beat Buffalo by 20. Laying 3.5. Then they come through and play Michigan, Mark, as a 1.5-point dog. They absolutely 63-44. They just destroyed Michigan.
Close. Yeah.
And then they come into the invincible Gonzaga. You know, they're getting 5, and they beat Gonzaga by 6.
Gonzaga,
sorry.
No, I wasn't correcting you. I'm just saying people get a little high on Gonzaga.
You kind of were.
I just think Gonzaga's not all what everybody props them up to be. That's all. Texas Tech is on a great run. I was surprised as anybody they lost to West Virginia in the conference tournament. That kind of soured me on them a little bit. But, you know, I think going into this game, they're – both Texas Tech and Michigan State are probably the hottest teams going right now, at least the way they're playing. And so this is going to be an incredible matchup, I think. As far as Texas Tech goes, you know, I do like the fact that they have kind of a go-to player in Jared Culver. You know, shoot threes well, free throws well, play defense, don't turn the ball over. Like, they've got a lot of good things going for them. So, I don't know. I mean, the competition's been pretty good. Everybody kind of loved Buffalo, you know. We've been on Buffalo all year, Josh, you know, and so that was a pretty amazing win. And them dismantling Michigan's very surprising, you know, just because of Beilein, the coach. You figure Michigan's going to give up a better effort. But Michigan,
team.
They just couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. I mean,
right. They
were 1-for-19 from three. And the one was a ball that hit the back iron with like 20 seconds left and kind of fell in. One of those balls that just kind of hits and just dies and falls in. Mm-hmm. That's the only one they hit the whole night. So 1-for-19, that's kind
of They almost ended a huge streak of not making a three before that one fell. And it was a backup. It was a backup player in garbage time.
I just threw
with
it
less
up
than a minute left.
Yeah, and it hit the back iron and kind of trickled in. I was like, oh, great.
No, but Mark,
1-for-19, though.
Yeah, I think you make a good point about Texas Tech kind of having that makeup of the team, not only the defense, but also a clear go-to guy and a future, another first, you know, a lottery pick when Culver goes. He's amazing. So they know who their crunch time guy is, but the other complimentary guys do some nice things as well. They're long. They get in all the passing lanes. So it makes sense now. But the flip side of the argument, I think, with Michigan State, to me it's one of those things where, man, Tom Izzo's had his share of disappointments. Early exits pretty recently, right? As long as he's been around and he's seen as like a college basketball icon, but he's got one championship to his name. That was almost 20 years ago. That was 2000. Been a while since he's been back to the Final Four. Duke was his biggest nemesis, you know, all time. He's heading into last week, it was like 14-2 against Krzyzewski. Just always has number. It couldn't have been wild about drawing the same bracket as Duke. To get past that hurdle is huge. I just feel like, you know, this year with this team, it's so hard to get to the Final Four. You know, they're going to want to not only make the most of it, but I also wonder, Mark, is this where that experience comes into play? The point being is this. Check out how Michigan State, just their preparedness and their intensity, how it takes hold of some games where the LSU game in the Sweet 16, for instance, right? LSU, a couple things.
Boy, could you see that game coming.
LSU, A, they're kind of soft to begin with, right?
No coach.
But, right. And then secondly, they tend to get off to slow start sometimes. And Michigan State just was there. They said, yeah, as soon as that ball was tipped, they're like, yeah, you're kind of not into this. We're just going to take the game right now. And they did. They went up 15 in like 5 minutes and never turned back. I mean, it got a little close in the second half. But I just feel like that's the thing. On this stage,
LSU cut it to four in the second half.
You know, Texas Tech is out there. Right. But you know what? That was bizarre. But you're right. It also shows Michigan State's resilience. LSU did make a good run.
And
it was back to 15.
And they still
won
by 17.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was cut to four. It was the fastest non-run I've ever seen. Where, like I said, LSU cut it to four, and then you look up 2 minutes later, it was 15 again. So it's like they just swatted it like a fly, that threat. And so I just wonder, on this stage, does this matter? Texas Tech is a little, you know,
first time
a little starstruck. Right. And Michigan State just comes out there like, no, we're all business. And I wonder if that factor comes in again. I think it does. I like Michigan State in the game.
I would lay two in this game. I don't have any interest in laying more than two. It's right now Nick has it at 2.5. You know, a little bit of money coming in there. You know, he has 1.5 in the first half for Michigan State. But, you know, you've got Izzo and a team that's not scared of this stage, you know, versus Texas Tech, a team that's had a great year. And I'm not discrediting what they've done. You know, you look at Texas Tech on the year, they're 30-6. You know, they were 17-1 at home, and they're 7-2 on neutral sites. You know, the Big Ten actually had a pretty good performance in the tournament, Mark. You know, a lot of people didn't really respect the conference and really what they did, but they had a really, really good run in the tournament. Michigan State, you know, 32-6 this year, 9-1 on neutrals. You know, and I just think that when it gets to this, with this stage and the experience and knowing how to manage the experience, I just like Izzo a little bit more than I do Beard. I think it comes down to it. And it's not like you're laying a whole lot. You know, you're basically just looking for a way to Michigan State to win this game. I like the -2, you know, the money line -155. That's a little bit too chalky for me.
Yeah, so that's a huge price for one bucket.
It's going to price me out of that as far as the money line is concerned. So with that being said, maybe there'll be some late Texas Tech money coming in and I don't have to buy down to two, but I'm looking to lay two with Michigan State in this spot.
Maybe you can go in play and hope Texas Tech jumps up 2-0 or 4-0.
I've been known to do
Then you get your price. That's probably what I'll do because
Texas Tech leading by four at the first TV timeout.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Michigan State in this game. I don't want to lay 155 on the money line. It's like you said, it's too much. It should be 130, 125, something like that. Maybe even 120.
Just shows you what a popular play it is. 2.5 points, right? 155 is like for a 4-point favorite.
You know, out of the last 24 classes that Izzo's had, only one class is not has had a player that did not make the Final Four. And that was last year.
That's pretty
so every player that's been in the program for 24 years has been to a Final Four except for that class last year.
Isn't that amazing?
So that just tells you
the
experience, how he coaches them up. Like, they're a tournament-tested, ready team. And I'll take that with the value. Michigan State
to win. You mentioned, by the way, Culver of Texas Tech. What I love Michigan State is their closer, too, Winston. He's a closer. He's a, you can count, that's a problem in years past. Michigan State always has the gritty, you know, players and the physicality, but sometimes they struggle to have the go-to guy. Well, it's clear. It's too bad they lost their second-best player. Joshua Langford's been out 60. I mean, imagine if they had him. But still, with Winston's a clear closer, and then you got some other guys who aren't afraid. Kenny Goings can make some big shots. And some of the other guys, McQuaid's good when he gets a chance. So all the other guys are capable as well.
Yeah, and he's on the all-defensive team in the Big Ten. Like, you wouldn't think that. But, I mean, they're just – Michigan State's a tough-nosed, tough grinder team. And I like the way they run their offense. Like, they get good shots. And they play at a faster pace than most people think, even though they're an excellent defensive team. So they can score efficiently. You know, I just think I like their side in this game. I think Texas Tech – I think they've kind of run into where as far as they can go.
Stretch the rubber band.
I mean, if they were to win, I would not be shocked because of how well they're playing. And, you know, I've been on them all year, but the thing is, this is a tough matchup for them, I think.
You know, going back to, you know, they opened up with Bradley, beat Bradley 76-65. Then they played Minnesota, beat Minnesota by 20. A lot of people were on Minnesota in that game, too. They were laying 10. A ton of people I know had Minnesota at plus 10.
That's where Minnesota's top three players were injured, but nonetheless, Jordan Murphy. I mean, they could do nothing depth-wise, but yeah.
And then going back to the LSU game, they were laying 6 to LSU, and I could see that game coming, you know, down the pipe. You look at the LSU game, you know, no coach. You knew Izzo was going to figure out a way to outcoach that kid. I mean, you know, once the head coach for LSU, Phillip Wade, yeah. You know, once you knew that, you know, he was out and wasn't going to be there, you know, you just kind of see that. And then the one-point win versus Duke, 68-67. So, you know, you look at that. I have some stats. We have about 20 seconds before we have to go off the traffic. But, you know, so right now, let's recap this. We've got Virginia laying 5.5 with a total of 131. That's the first tip tomorrow versus Auburn at 309. Michigan State minus 2.5. Total is 132. That game tips at approximately 549. That game's versus Texas Tech. And then we have some first half stuff, and we'll give out the odds real quick on who's going to win the next two games, because one team's got to win the next two games and win this national title. So with all that being said, we're going to head off to our next commercial break. Be back after these messages, ESPN 94.5 FM. Welcome back to the Windmill Sports Show on ESPN 94.5 FM. We continue with this game. We're talking about Michigan State, Texas Tech. You know, I already kind of said that I like Michigan State laying 2. It's 2.5, so I'm probably going to pass until I kind of see what settles in tomorrow, Mark and Josh. But, you know, we talked about some of the props right here. Largest lead of the game for this game is 13.5. This is a game where I could see the over in the 13.5 a little bit more than I could see the over in the other game at 15.5.
Well, it's tough given the both teams though with that kind of defensive mentality. It's sort of hard to create that separation, right? If you look at even Duke, Michigan State sort of played along those lines last Sunday. And I think the biggest lead in that game was Duke by 9. Michigan State, I think, was up 7. So I think it'd still be, again, tough to create the separation unless, again, like Michigan State at the side here, it becomes that, unless it becomes a Michigan State blowout. Otherwise, I'd probably just back off and not play that prop.
I just don't know how do you effectively handicap that prop. That's my thing is, like, where do you come up with an angle to like either way? You know what I mean? I just – these four teams and the pace they play, you know, where you expect both these – the totals tell you they're 131, 132, so they expect kind of a lower scoring game. So it's kind of hard to get that margin. And if those games go true to that point spread, but – you know,
I agree, they're both pretty tight.
We've seen a lot of games at 70 to 50 also where it just kind of gets away and, you know, a team doesn't make a bucket for the last 4 or 5 minutes of the game and it gets away from them, and then they lose their spirit, and then next thing you know, it's 72-50 final. You know, that's the only way I see either of these getting over those numbers.
What about the three-point field goals made this game, you know, 13.5 compared to the 17.5 last game? You know, what I've seen Michigan State doing a couple of these, they've just been shooting lights out from three.
Sometimes, Ken, but I researched this one. The reason it's so low is because you realize both are, like, top in the country in defending the three-point shot. So it's no surprise. Texas Tech is, like, fifth in the country, whatever. It's, like, 27%, something ridiculous. And Michigan State only allows a little bit worse than that. So the whole thing is they defend it well, and the teams aren't known necessarily for all their outside shooting. But you also think usually in a big, you know, the Final Four game, you know, someone has to come up with some clutch threes, you know, just to win the game. Having said that, yeah, just given the way these defenses play, I have a hard time backing the over in that one.
I think I lean to the over just because I think there'll be enough threes shot. It's just a matter of whether they shoot a high enough percentage of them, obviously. But I think the pace of this game is going to be a little higher than most people think. I don't think it's going to be this, you know, knockout, grind out 11-6 after 13 minutes of the first half like the Michigan game was. You know, Michigan runs a very efficient offense to me, and Texas Tech is a much better offensive team than they were even per se last year when they made their grade A run. I think the pace will be there, and I think they'll be efficient enough to get over those total. I like first half over, and I even like the game over.
I can see that. You know, you look at Virginia, and I know Texas Tech has a great defense, and there's no doubt about that. But and you look at the Auburn Virginia game, and it's just kind of weird to me that it's 131 and 132 and a half. I can see the Auburn Virginia going over or under, but I can see both teams in the 70s in the Michigan State Texas Tech game. Mark,
I think
seriously,
they will be. I
can
be.
See Michigan State scoring 76 points this game. I mean, they're just so good. You know, and we talked about Culver. You know, total points for Culver, guys. What do you think about him? I just lost 19 and a half, Josh.
Yeah, to me, that's one, especially, and I actually did research this for Sportsline as well. Of course, that's about his season average. He had not exactly 19 against Gonzaga, but he's over that most other games. And to me, that's one of those deals, though. You see in the Final Four, whenever it's, you know, the top player by far, like it is here with him, or last year was Devontae Graham with Kansas, even though they got blown out. But you almost always take the top player and take him over, because what are they going to do without him? I mean, Texas Tech, seriously, I think they stand no chance to win if he doesn't get there. And I mean, you know, he's your top player. He's going to be the go-to guy. He's been dependable all year, so you got to take him over.
Plus, he had not his best game last game where, you know, he's got a little extra motivation to, you know, kind of – and I think they'll kind of feature him earlier than they did last game to kind of get him going. Because I think they know that they need to get him going in order for them to win this game. You know, I mean, or at least it'd be a determining factor, to get him going.
You want to go down with your ace shooting bullets.
Right, exactly.
So with that being said, so where are we at, guys? Let's recap these four games real quick, and I want to get your guys' picks on this. Virginia, Auburn, Virginia laying 5.5, totals 131. Mark, what's your best play in this game?
I think the under is the way to go. I think Virginia will dictate the tempo, and I think it'll go under. I see this game in the low 60s, I like that under. I think the number, I thought it would be like 126 when it came out, and it was 131, so I immediately thought under, and that's the only thing I bet so far.
Especially when you can see a Virginia game going into a spell where, you know, they go through a 4.5 minute where it's a 4-2, Josh.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, like I said, they've played higher than usual this year, so I'm just stuck on, you know, I'm not necessarily, you know, wild about either side of the total, but it's unlike usually I look for underdogs or whatnot. But I just like Virginia. I think they're the better team. One example I gave a gentleman I was talking with earlier today about is just sort of, you know, everything, of course, is priced according to what we've recently seen, and fair enough and all that. But what would you do if just out of nowhere, if some of they have these cross-conference you know, rivalry sometimes in the middle of the season. My point being is if Virginia and Auburn were just put on the neutral court in the middle of the season and Virginia was -5.5, you'd think it was a steal on Virginia. I still think it is. So that's where I'm going.
Yeah, and I totally would in that situation. I'd be like, oh, give me Virginia.
All right. And then the Michigan State, Texas Tech, I'm just going to play this game over. If it comes down to two, I'll be looking to play a little favorite and over, a little score action. I'm going to pass on the 2.5, but I do like the over 132.
I like the over as well, and I lean Michigan State, and I think I will try to get on the in-play early and try to get a better number to try and get that money line a little closer to where I like it.
All right. There we have it. Masters. Can you guys believe that the Masters starts next Thursday, Josh? Are you a little bit – I mean, I know everybody knows we have a little bit of wager on Tiger
right,
Woods.
We're back in action, finally.
Yeah, he's third favorite right now. He's 12-1. You know, Rory McIlroy, the favorite.
He's live.
Yeah, Rory McIlroy, the favorite to win the Masters at 8-1. Dustin Johnson, 10-1. Tiger Woods, 12-1. There's some other things I'm going to throw out here in a minute, Mark. But what do you got? What do you got for the Masters? I mean, I know there's going to be a bunch of matchups and stuff coming on, but here we are, one of the four majors for 2019. You're ready to tee off in less than a week.
It's tough to take those like favorites at the top. I like looking at these 20, 25, 30-1 shots, guys like. DeChambeau.
Well, I got a couple of them.
Molinari. I like those guys. Their form is good right now, and they've performed well there. I know there's more tickets on Fleetwood right now than anybody, is from what I've heard. So I know that he's alive.
18.
Is he 18-1? Okay, so I know a lot of people like Fleetwood, but I like Molinari and DeChambeau. And I'm thinking Spieth. What's Spieth right now?
18.
He's tied for the lead in the
I think he's a couple back.
I fired on Spieth in every major last
year. Oh, yeah,
year
somebody made a late run.
He didn't cash, so yeah. He needs to start coming home to roost.
But yeah. he is in the Texas tournament this week. I have it right here.
And yeah,
I can tell you
he's a couple back now because guy made a late run.
He's at minus eight. Kim is at minus 12.
Yeah, Kim. So he had a late run, but Spieth always performs well at the Masters, and if he goes in, you know, maybe he finishes well this weekend. If he finishes well this weekend, I'm definitely. The value might be gone on him, so I probably should bet him this weekend before that happens. But
so, what about last year's winner, Patrick Reed?
I mean, what about him? I hope he fell off the earth.
50-1.
Oh, that's pretty damn good. 50-1.
50-1.
Brooks Koepka's winning like everything. Now.
Well, he Koepka. I was just going to say that he won two events last year. He's right here. I just had it queued up because that was one of the guys. 22-1, Josh. Why not?
That's pretty good. They won half of them last year, like you said.
Yeah, he won half of them last year, and he could be in the running. And Molinari, kid, like you said, you know, he won one of them last year. Wasn't it Molinari, Koepka, and then Patrick Reed won the four majors? Is that right, Josh? That sound
Koepka,
right?
Koepka, Molinari, Reed.
Yeah, you know, and then you got Molinari at 20-1.
I like that. I mean, he's been playing outstanding, and he's in top 10 all these tournaments this whole winter, and I think he's got good form. He's on flat bull. He's won a major. I mean, I could see him winning. I'm going to bet Molinari for sure.
You know, my buddy Barry Phillips, you know, he always starts texting me on Monday and Tuesday next week, and he starts giving me a bunch of these long shots. You know, so it's going to be interesting to see who he gives us, you know, in these long shots.
He's going to give you like Adam Scott probably.
JB, what about JB Holmes? 150-1.
Wow.
Is that not worth a $10 bill?
I mean, a lot of these guys can win. It's just it's tough to get on board with some of those super long shots.
With
Fowler, he's due to win.
Ricky Fowler?
But he's only going to be like 14 or something, right?
16.
Yeah.
16. Josh, do you put out any of the stuff on Sportsline about the Masters?
Yeah, we do stuff for everything. Like, I specifically, you know, I've done a little golf, but actually one of our main, you know, what they call data engineers, or this guy Mike McClure is really good on golf. He does it every year, and he tends to have pretty good leaderboards where, like, he gets a lot of winners and a lot of the top five finishers, right? So there's good info out there.
Phil Mickelson, 30-1, you know, a name that everybody knows.
Well, I'll give you one. Schauffele, what's he?
Who?
Schauffele, Xander.
40-1.
That's a great one. 40-1 on that guy? That's value.
Is that value?
I'm on it. He'll be one of mine.
What about Oosthuizen?
Oosthuizen? He's a former winner.
He's always in there.
40.
He's a former winner.
There's some long shots. You know, it's like everything is bunched at the top with Roy being plus 8-1, Dustin Johnson 10-1, Tiger Woods 12-1, Justin Thomas and Justin Rose. The Justin's up 14-1. You know, and then you get to the 16th, 18th, and then it really goes up. And somebody's going to be here. Sergio Garcia 50-1. I mean, I'm excited already about the Masters, and I love the matchups in this, you know. And, you know, Nick will have a bunch of props out. You know, Nick Bogdanovich, the head trader or bookie for William Hill, he'll have, you know, the average score versus, you know, what's the cut going to be versus all kinds of stuff. You know, it's so exciting to see what
Will there be a hole-in-one? Everything.
Will there be a hole-in-one? You know, yeah, exactly, all that stuff. He doesn't quite have it out right now, but that's one of the great things. Mark, who's going to win it? Give me
Tiger Woods.
You think he's going to win it at 12-1?
No, I think I'll take Xander Schauffele right now.
Just because of the value and where he's at?
Yeah, I'll take him right now.
All right, good deal, good deal. Let's see. Uh-oh.
But I really like DeChambeau, though, also.
Josh, anything?
Well, of course, I'll be rooting for Tiger just for our side action there. I'm really hoping he's in the mix. Yeah, he's way overvalued at 12-1, though. I mean, we'll see. If he wins, I'd be thrilled. But also, like I said, going back to a couple of years ago, as you mentioned, the hottest guy around, he's fallen off a little bit. But Jordan Spieth, I need him in there. He was a cash cow for a while, but I was pretty disappointed because I fired on him. He was giving us some good odds last year, and he came up short. So he needs to get back on track.
All right. Reno Aces opened up the season last night. They lost to Fresno 5-4. Their actual homestand will be next week on Tuesday the 9th at 6:35 versus Albuquerque. It's opening day, home opening day. And so they're going to play Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And then they'll come back on Friday versus El Paso. And the first Friday, the 6:35 game, is going to be the fireworks game. You know, but the reason I'm telling you guys this is because I talked to Nick today. Guess what he's going to do starting next week?
Aces gambling again.
Yes.
Nice.
You can bet on Aces games again starting next week, Mark. There was nothing better than going to the Aces game with action on the Aces game.
Did I ever tell you this? I mean, I thought it was such a cool thing, such a novelty. I actually kept some tickets that were winners because I wanted a souvenir. Because I like 2 weeks, because I did some articles on it and stuff when it happened. It was like 2 or 3 weeks into it, they banned it. I'm like, are you kidding me? But I actually had some winners. I said, oh, tournament or they won't be good anyway. Like, no, I'm keeping this just for, you know, prosperity's sake. It was pretty sweet. So now that they're bringing it back.
You can cash them in now.
Ball jumps there. Good. Ball jumps there. They start coming up with these short totals. Pacific Coast League games. Don't bet them under.
Yeah, I
do
just
not.
Bet overs. That's,
oh, yeah.
That's all I do.
Especially, you know, we go out here, we see the winds blowing dead to right, you know, and just, you know, walk out. I can walk out to the parking garage in the club count even. Look at the flags over at Aces
that's
Stadium.
This sounds stupid to say, but I live walking distance to the Aces Stadium. And the novelty, of course, worn off a little because they've been here 10 years. But I still go to a few games a year. How many more, you know, with the gambling?
Oh,
how
me?
Many, yeah, how do you think I'm going to go to? I went to like 3 last year.
I'll go to 20 there. This year if I can wager.
I'm not joking. On the app, I know.
Especially if
that jumps my attendance up, I'll tell you that.
The same way.
I need to ask Nick if they have in-play, too.
Can you imagine?
Are you going to have in-play on the Aces games? Oh, my goodness.
Unlikely, but still.
You know what I'll do, Josh? I will fire up the app.
Yes, exactly.
At least we feel like we have an advantage, even if we really don't.
Exactly.
Oh, there's no – but yeah, but Mark, putting a $20, $50 bill in a game.
I'm just saying, the whole Aces experience, it's one thing. You know, it's a nice, you know, outing or whatever for entertainment, but come on. Yeah, the gambling, that's just –
oh,
it's just what we do.
Fan-freaking-tastic, is it not? All right. Let's head off to our last commercial break. We'll come back. We'll continue talking sports on ESPN 94.5 FM. Welcome back to the William Hill Sports Show. Coming live from the Club County on ESPN 94.5 FM. Make sure you like the show on Facebook at Kenny B ESPN Sports Handicapping. That's Kenny B ESPN Sports Handicapping. And you can follow me on Twitter also at Ken Barler. That's just my name, Ken Barler, B-A-R-L-O-R. When I first opened my Twitter account, I wasn't that creative, so I didn't really know anything about it. I wish I would have a neat handle now. But
that's fine, Ken, though, because they say your name is your brand, so that's actually the way to do it. Make yourself easy to find.
All right, there you go. And Josh Nagel.
Exactly. Send my handle as well, Josh Nagel 1, the 1 only because Josh Nagel was taken, so and had to add a number. Yeah,
and you can get stuff, Josh's stuff on Sportsline, too.
Thank you. Correct. Josh Nagel 1 on Twitter and sportsline.com for everything else.
All right. Kid brought up during the break that next Saturday we're going to be in the playoffs of hockey, the playoffs of the NBA. We got Major League Baseball and what else? The third round of the Masters next Saturday. You know, with that being said, there's still where'd the basketball go? Did they already start? I was just going to talk about the pro basketball. They just had the lines. Did he move them? Three games left tonight. There was three games left tonight in pro basketball.
They rotated through.
They rotated through. Okay.
Four that haven't tipped yet.
Looks like
Pelicans, Suns.
Yeah, Golden State 54-24, 4 games left. They have a 2-game lead over the Denver Nuggets. You know, with the playoffs getting ready to start, and that's one of the later games. And you have what do we have? Where did it go, Josh? Right there, laying 16 tonight versus the Cleveland Cavaliers. Cleveland, man, 19-60 on the road in the East Coast. Probably looking to enjoy the West Coast a little bit more than they want to play basketball. Josh, wouldn't you say?
Exactly. You know, it's so many points to lay, though. It's like one of those things. In the NBA, everyone has guys who can play a little bit, but then, you know, suddenly look up and it was 75-40 in the second quarter. I wouldn't be surprised, but I couldn't really, you know, jump in on either side of this one because, like you mentioned, at least the Warriors are still incentivized to play hard to get that number one seed. It seems like the mean business because at least lately the games they had kind of been losing. They're taking care of business against the bad teams. They could keep that up.
Yeah, and, you know, I had the Warriors in the first half last night. I bet them again the first half tonight. I just think that –
what are you laying in the first half?
Nine and a half.
Nine, yeah.
Yeah. And I took that with the Clippers first half against the Lakers, looking for a similar situation as last night. Lakers have tuned out, you know what I mean? And the Clippers have been playing well, especially at home. I like both those teams to have a good big first half, so I parlayed them together. That's the only thing I really like in those two games. It's tough to, you know what their incentive is if they have these big leads in the second half.
You know what I'm really surprised about, Mark, as you mentioned? I can't believe what the Clippers have done. It's basically – seriously, amounts to like a happy accident. They're with everyone else. They were essentially trying to tank in the second half. Instead, they made the playoffs. So they traded Tobias Harris. They traded, you know, obviously Blake Griffin last year. But it's just like, all right, you know what? Let's clean the slate. Maybe let's start over, get a good draft pick. Suddenly, they bring in these guys like after that, Landry, Shamet, and some of the other guys. And suddenly, you know, they win like 10 games. And now they're going to the playoffs. I think. What happens when you're trying to tank and it backfires?
As a 6 seed.
Yeah.
They have a better.
They're not even, right. They're not even dead, you know, like I said, that low. I mean, they're a 6 seed.
They have
2
more wins than Oklahoma City.
Yeah. Like, how did this even happen? You can name a couple players. Who's you know, the other guy from Louisville? Gets all the Montrell Harris or whatever his name is.
Montrell, yep.
Yeah, he's really good. I mean, they have a couple decent players, and Lou Williams is still there, but he's. it is what it is. They didn't, you know, make any major upgrades. They were actually trying to downgrade overall to stack up resources and get in that draft, and now they're in the playoffs.
Well, and they got a couple guys like Shamet. You know, he wants to make a name for himself, and he's a good player. You know, and he's fit in really well with them. He's scoring like 19 points a game with them or something. And he's had a couple big games, too. Shoots a three. Clippers are fun to watch. Play high pace, and, I mean, I think Doc Rivers has done a great job with them.
Do you think that the L.A. Lakers bounce back after this dismantling they had last night versus the Golden State Warriors? Clippers are laying 11.5 in this game versus the Lakers. You know, what was Golden State laying last night, Mark? 16? You know,
16.
16. I think
it was that high. It closed, I think, like 13.5.
Oh.
The closing number. They won by 18.
Oh, no, you're right. Yeah. It was 13.5. You're right.
So do you guys kind of look for the Lakers to maybe get back, you know, just play for pride?
Yeah, you would think, but again, it's one of those things where – Mark mentioned, like, how much
they have a two-game lead over Oklahoma City for the 6-7.
Back is there to do when you're the Lakers, when they've sort of tuned out anyway, when they've sort of checked out? I put it this way: they may be more competitive than last night, but
how can you know where the Lakers' heads are at? You know, and like who? I look to bet against the Lakers in these situations. So, and I have been doing that, and it's been serving me well. So I'm just going to keep doing that. Lakers bounce back from what they?
Not just pride.
Yeah,
just pride. You know, LeBron shut it down. Obviously, everybody knows that. You know, and the Lakers aren't going to make the playoffs now. So, which I love. You know, LeBron just going to another team. You know, I saw a stat on how many games Michael Jordan played in the last 10 years of his career, and he averaged like 79. I mean, just something crazy. I mean, the guy just showed up every.
Wait a second, LeBron played every game last year.
Yeah,
every game.
All right, how many?
He's injured this year.
Yeah, he had the groin injury, and then they pulled him out. But, yeah, by and large, he's pretty
– he's
been, you know, a reliable guy over the years.
Still, hey, I'm a LeBron hater still.
No,
still don't like him.
Clearly.
Still don't
clearly
like him.
Clearly you just don't like LeBron.
Oh, yeah, he's getting blown up in the media now.
Oh, he should. He deserves a lot of it.
Oh, he deserves
There's
a ton
no doubt
of it.
About.
So what's going to happen now, though? I think it's interesting. So what do you do?
He gone, hopefully.
They're probably
– Who cares? You know, just retire.
They probably get rid of the
second
coach,
best basketball player ever lived.
How else do they – you know, are they going to be able to find a couple guys to come play with him? Turn it around at all?
I really don't know. They messed up
They're still going to go hard for the
They messed up
Davis
the
thing.
Davis thing.
That's what they're going to go for.
So I don't know. They went about it the wrong way, and the roster they put together this year was awful with a bunch of misfits. And they're trying to blame it on the coach. And, I mean, what's Walton supposed to do with those guys? You know what I mean?
Nothing, but they will get rid of him. So
I know, but it doesn't make any sense. It's not his fault. I don't know.
The whole Laker thing. Who else is out there? Doug Collins one more time? Like, get another, you know, recycled guy?
The whole Laker thing is a debacle right now, and I don't know where it goes from here.
Golden State's going to come out of the West as the number one seed. I'm pretty sure that's what's going to happen. Denver's going to end up number two, Houston number three. Then you go back to the East, you got the Milwaukee Bucks, 59-20 with a three-game lead over Toronto. So Bucks are going to hold off on the East, probably be the number one seed. Is there anybody in the East that really scares you guys to really challenge for the title real quick?
Boston. When they're playing well, here's what's funny. We talked a little bit before the show of some of the improvements the Raptors have made. I'm still not buying them because, hey, good for them. Kawhi Leonard, you know, ended up there.
But he plays when he wants
to. They're babying the guy. Yeah, they're not going to be able to keep him out. But I think it's ridiculous because look at the Spurs. DeRozan, at first he was unhappy, you know, because he actually loved Toronto. But he's doing great on the Spurs. He's a team guy. Yeah, they ended up with this albatross. I mean, it's crazy. Kawhi Leonard, he doesn't want to play. And so even though he's completely healthy, they sit him out like every other night, just kind of trying to make him happy and hoping he'll stay there. But he won't. And the Raptors, for some reason, they always collapse in the playoffs. They've got the most talent, but I still see them coming up short.
I think Milwaukee's live, and they should have home field or home court, right?
Oh,
that's still in the air.
The best record in the league.
Yeah, I think that's still up in the air, right?
What do you think?
No, they do. They actually have a 5-game lead. They have 59
wins.
Yeah,
I think
State has 54. Wow.
I think Milwaukee's certainly live.
Absolutely, that's a great point. I need to go figure out what the futures are on Milwaukee right now, coming out of the East and winning the East. Go ahead. You guys keep
– I just feel like if Boston, though, despite all their inconsistencies and the weird dynamics that they have, and it looks
can they turn it on, you think?
I'm not sure, but I just think if they somehow can, Mark, I think Boston at their best is pretty scary.
I mean, I would never be surprised if Boston made it all the way through. It's just they've had some of these games that are just like, what are you doing?
Yeah. 5-1. 5-1. 5.5 and a half. Plus 550.
The value's kind of gone on them, but that's still a pretty good number, I think. I think Milwaukee can beat Golden State. I don't think Golden State is this – juggernaut that everybody says they are. You know, I don't – that they have been over the last couple of years.
They thought that when Boogie came in, Boogie Cousins came in, it was going to change everything.
I'm going to tell you right now, I think Milwaukee wins the NBA championship.
Well. You do?
Yeah, I think they do.
You going to put a little money on that?
I am. I'm going to scratch. I'm gonna put some scratch on it.
Some scratch at plus $5?
Yeah.
Who's going to win the MVP?
Oh, it's got to be Antetokounmpo.
Yeah, I think it's got to be Giannis now.
Can you believe that we talked about this about 4 weeks ago when Harden was like minus –
it was like -$7, yeah. And Giannis was 3-1.
Yeah,
still.
And here we are, you know, just wow, that's just crazy. That
they typically take the best player on the team with the best record, so that is Giannis.
But it did look like Harden was running away with it a couple months ago.
I know he was, like you said, he was minus 750 or something at one point. He got to, but then a few different things changed. A couple of their head-to-head matchups went the Bucks' way, you know, started changing.
All right, Josh, we got about a minute and a half. What do you want to throw out there? Big UFC card next week. Anything on that? Are you going to be prepped for that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's actually one of their biggest ones of the year. There's two interim title fights. It's UFC 236, not this, but next Saturday, so the 13th. But we can talk about it next week. But there's some real nice fights. But the main event, Dustin Poirier against Max Holloway, it's kind of a super fight. Like, they're fighting for the interim title while Khabib's still suspended, but they're lightweights. That's a great fight. And the co-main is Israel Adesanya against Kelvin Gastelum, and they're doing the middleweight interim thing while the champion Robert Whittaker, he's out injured. But both those co-main and main are just awesome fights, and it's overall a pretty stacked card, so it's one that'd be worth pitching out for pay-per-view on, but we should talk about it a little next week.
All right, Auburn versus Virginia tomorrow. That game tips off at about 3:09. Virginia laying 5.5, total 131. Mark, you like the under in this game. Josh, you tend to lead towards
Cavaliers,
Virginia in this game. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right, so there we have that. Michigan State, Texas Tech. That game tips off right after that, approximately 5:49. Michigan State laying 2.5, total 132.5. I tend to like Michigan State if I can get them at 2. I think there's some value at 2. That's as high as I would lay in that game. And I kind of agree with Mark a little bit on the over 132.
I like Michigan State as well. I think they'll win this game.
A little favorite and over right there, Josh?
I would just do Spartans. I like both chalks for some reason.
All right, anything else this weekend you want to throw out there? We got about 20 seconds, Josh.
No, Final Four is plenty for me to focus on this weekend.
All right, and then we'll be posting our final thoughts on the final game on our Facebook page at Kenny B, ESPN Sports Handicapping, for Monday night's championship game with a bunch of prop bets, too. So, all right, guys, good luck with all your wager, and see you next week. Same time, same place. ESPN.
Thanks for joining us for the William Hill Sports Show. Be sure to tune in again next Friday at 5 p.m. for all the action. This is KUUB Sun Valley, ESPN Radio 94.5.